This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's John Dalton Banks Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see johncast.net.
The night sky in May 2013. Of course, May, June, July, the nights aren't all that long, so in a way we have less to see. But let's have a look and see what there is in the sky twixt sunset and dawn. As the sun sets over in the west, the constellation of Taurus the Bull is setting, and we'll come back to that in one of the highlights. And more prominently, now moving from the south to southwest and then down to the west, is that rather nice constellation of Leo the Lion, looking a little bit like the lions in Trafalgar Square, on their haunches. Over to the left of Leo, low down, it's a fairly empty part of the sky, which contains the constellation of Virgo. It is, however, a very rich area of the sky if you have a reasonable-sized telescope, because between Virgo and Coma Berenices above, we have what is called the realm of the galaxies, where there are many of the Charles Messier objects, such as M87 I photographed the other night. But you do need a dark sky, good binoculars, or a small telescope to see them. The brightest star in Virgo is Spica, Alpha Virginis, and over to the left of that, as we shall see, is the planet Saturn. Moving up above Virgo, towards, in fact, the plough high up in the sky, we have the constellation of Bootes, and the brightest star there is a somewhat yellowish star, Arcturus. To its left, the Northern Crown. And then an interesting constellation called Hercules will be rising well up in the east. The four brightest stars of Hercules make up what is called a keystone. And with binoculars, if you scan between the lower right and the upper right of these four stars, you should see a little fuzzy blob. And that's a globular cluster called M13, the largest and brightest in our northern hemisphere. As the night moves on, that rather lovely part of the sky, containing three constellations, Lyra, Cygnus, and Aquila, with their bright stars Vega, Deneb, and Altair, forming what is called the Summer Triangle. And we'll say more about that in the coming months. If you do have a telescope, just to the left of the bright star Vega, Alpha Lyrae, is a rather lovely little object. Well, it's two stars, but if you look at them with binoculars, you'll see the two, I hope. But if you look at them with a telescope on the night of dark seeing, you see each of that pair is itself a double star. So it's called the double-double, and one of the loveliest sights in the northern sky. To find out more about some of these individual objects, you might care to put in the astronomical A-list into Google, or find it, in fact, from our night sky page. Quite a few years ago now, I made a list of what I think are the 50th best objects in the whole sky, hence the name A-list, and a little description of each of those and how to find them. You might find that useful and even perhaps interesting. Well, what of the planets this month? It's actually not a bad month for planets. Jupiter, in the constellation of Taurus, is still visible in the west after sunset, but its low elevation will hamper our viewing. It shines at magnitude -2 at the beginning of May, and it's between the horns of Taurus the Bull, some 9 degrees above the star Aldebaran. The angular diameter is, of course, dropping as it moves away from us, from 33.6 to 32.4 arc seconds, but even so, a small telescope will show you the bands and up to four of the Galilean moons as they weave their way around it. Well, Saturn, as we shall see, is a highlight this month. But one or two things about it. It's lying in Libra as May begins. It reached opposition on the 28th of April. So it'll be visible all night, and it will be due south around midnight UT. It crosses into Virgo on the 13th of May as it moves westward in what's called retrograde motion. And that's because the Earth is actually sort of moving around more quickly on the inside track. So even though Saturn is still moving eastwards in the sky, our view of it, as seen from the Earth, tends to move backwards for a bit. The rings are about 18 degrees from the line of sight, which isn't bad. They will extend about 43 arc seconds around the diameter of the little disk, which is about 13 arc seconds. we're seeing the planet's southern hemisphere. Much of the northern hemisphere, of course, will be hidden by the rings. And with a small scope, you should be able to pick up Saturn's largest moon, Titan. It doesn't get very high, I'm afraid. I think about 28 degrees elevation at transit. And that's because it's moving down towards the lower part of the ecliptic. And sadly, this is going to get worse for quite a number of years to come. Well, what about Mercury? It passes behind the Sun on May the 11th, so you obviously don't see it in the first half of the month. And it will be visible from about the 19th, when it joins Jupiter and Venus in the evening sky, one of the highlights this month. So I'll say more about that later on. Even though Mercury will shine initially at magnitude minus 1.4, you'll almost certainly need binoculars to spot it against the twilight sky. As the May progresses, Mercury climbs higher, but also becomes fainter, and Jupiter drops lower towards the horizon. So for a little while, as we shall see, they form a very nice trio, with all three planets within a 5-degree circle for several days. And on the 26th, they'll only be in a circle 2.5 degrees across. So you'll easily see them in the same field with a pair of binoculars or with a small telescope. That'll be a very nice imaging opportunity should, let's hope, it be clear. Well, Mars passes behind the Sun on the 18th of April and so will not be visible for several months until it appears in the pre-dawn sky. Well, Venus, shining at magnitude minus 3.9, emerges from behind the Sun in the second week of May and rises, as I've said, to join Mercury and Jupiter in the evening sky after sunset. Its disk spans 10 arc seconds across, and when you see it in mid-May, it'll be nearly full phase, and the phase will only drop to 96% by a month's end. It was the fact that Galileo observed that Venus could show virtually full phases that implied it must be beyond the Sun, and hence, rather than going round in what's called an epicycle between the Earth and the Sun, as in the Ptolemaic idea of the solar system, it actually orbited the Sun, the Copernican idea. That was a very fundamental observation made by Galileo. Well, finally, what about the month's highlights? Well, I've mentioned Saturn. It crosses into Virgo on the 13th. It's still pretty low, as I've said. The magnitude falls fractionally from plus 0.1 to plus 0.3 magnitudes, so it's not that bright. The angular size decreases just a little from 18.8 to 18.5 arc seconds. We're now observing the planet's southern hemisphere, and a small scope should easily show Cassini's division, if the seeing is good. There are two aspects to the atmosphere, seeing and transparency. Transparency basically says how faint stars you can see with your unaided eye. Seeing is how good the image quality is when you use a telescope to, say, observe the planets. The seeing is very bad when you see the stars twinkling a lot. And sadly, it's usually the case that when the transparency is good, we have clear air coming in from the poles, polar maritime air. It's actually pretty turbulent, so the seeing's terrible. On the other hand, on occasions, particularly when the air is coming from the south, we get these rather hazy days in late autumn. The seeing can be very good. It's very rare that both are good together. In fact, one such night occurred just a few days ago, as I record this, and I took an absolutely wonderful image of the moon, a single exposure with a camera, showing more detail than I'd ever seen before in a single exposure. Sadly, though, soon after taking that first picture, the clouds came over, and I was hoping, in fact, to be able to image Saturn later that night. This was not to be. So do try and have a look at Saturn. Show it to your friends. If you have a telescope, it'll make them see one of the wonders, I think, of our night sky. The thing that makes Saturn stand out, of course, is its ring system. The two outermost rings, A and B, are separated by a gap called Cassini's division. Lying within the B ring, but far less bright and difficult to spot, is the C or Crape ring. They're actually easiest seen when Saturn is at opposition. In fact, the rings actually become brighter as the light sort of falls on them and reflects straight back pretty much to us. So that would be the case at the very beginning of May. due to the orientation of Saturn's rotation axis, it's 27 degrees in angle to the plane of the solar system, the rings appear differently over the orbit, and twice each orbit they lie edge on to us, and so can hardly be seen. That last happened in 2009, and as I've said, they're now opening out. They'll continue to open out until about May 2017, and then narrow until March 2025, when they'll be edge on again. Well, we do have a meteor shower this month, May the 6th, before dawn. You have a chance, if clear, of seeing what is called the Eta Aquarid meteor shower. You have to look east-southeast well before dawn on the morning of May the 6th, and you need a good low horizon in that direction. A thin, waning crescent moon will be in the same part of the sky, but not hopefully too bright, so it should not hide too many of perhaps 10 meteors per hour that you might see. So it's not a particularly dynamic meteor shower. The Eta Aquarids, as they're called, result from dust particles that were released from Comet Halley in an eruption as it neared the sun some 4,000 years ago. Well, in principle, in May, you can see two comets. We've talked about Comet Pan-STARRS in the last couple of months. It's now, in fact, circumpolar. That is, you could see it all through the night as it passes between Cassiopeia towards Polaris in Ursa Minor. And again, the thing to do is to look on the, quotes, night skies page of the Jodrell Bank website. There's a little chart telling you where to look throughout the month. It's obviously fading now, so it won't be terribly bright, but I think binoculars or a small telescope should show it. And it does actually show a very nice little tail. It looks just like a comet ought to, if not particularly bright. And there's a second comet that will enter our skies from the southern hemisphere, where in fact it's actually shown up rather well. It's going to come up to the left of the square of Pegasus, so again only visible in the hours before dawn. Initially at a magnitude of about plus 6.5, so binoculars would easily pick it up. But it probably would be lost in the sun's glare at that time. But during the month, it actually moves up along the left-hand side of the square of Pegasus. But as it does so, its magnitude, as it moves further from the sun, drops to about plus 8, so binoculars will certainly be needed. So on the 11th, it lies just to the left of the lower star of the great square. And on the 30th, it'll be just to the left of the brightest star in the square, Alpha Andromedae, in fact, called Alpharatz. So that's probably quite a good time to look for it. It'll be fairly obvious where to see it. It was actually pretty good, as I said, in the southern hemisphere. It reached a magnitude of plus 4.7 and showed a rather nice, slender, green tail. Well, we have this month what is called a megamoon or a supermoon. And that's when we have a moon, when it's full, closest to the Earth. The angular size is therefore as big as it can be. And as it's full moon, it's also as bright as it can be and can really look rather dynamic. So the night to watch is perhaps the evening of May the 24th, although it's actually closest to the Earth on the morning of the 25th. And in fact, there's an incredibly minor penumbral eclipse, which I doubt whether almost anybody could observe, as at the time the moon will be setting into the west and it'll be getting light. But nevertheless, the diameter will be 12% greater than it normally is, and on the night sky page I've actually shown a little plot that I made, two moons, one when it's at apogee, one when it's at perigee, showing what's quite a dynamic difference in size. Why the moon looks so big when it's near the horizon is definitely an optical illusion, because in fact, of course, it should look bigger when it's in the sky overhead, simply because we're then nearer to it by about one Earth radii, if you think about it. The reasoning that I like is that we feel that our dome, the dome above our heads, isn't actually hemispherical, but flattened. So the sky above is closer to us than the sky on the horizon. And that was certainly true when you look at the clouds. So when we see the moon on the horizon, we think it's much further away than when it's actually above us. And perhaps our brain puts in some correcting effect to make it appear as it does much larger. So, finally, at the very end of the month, we've talked about Jupiter falling towards the horizon and Mercury and Venus rising up from the horizon. From the evenings of the 24th to the 28th, they will form quite a nice little tight grouping seen just above the horizon after sunset. You will need a pretty good low horizon. And in fact, the chart that I showed based on Solarium, I had to put an ocean horizon in rather than the normal one, because in the normal horizon they were hidden by a big tree. So best seen about 2200 BST in the northwest after sunset. You'll probably need binoculars, particularly to pick up Mercury the faintest, but don't use them, of course, until the sun has set. Venus will be the brightest, followed by Jupiter, and then Mercury. And I have put a little plot as how they will appear on the 26th. They make a very nice equilateral triangle. And a warning, the plot that I put, I actually have to reduce the skylight to make the planets visible. So the planets will not appear so obvious to you as they do in the little chart. So there we go. Let's hope we have some nice clear nights and you get some good observing, even though the nights are not that long. Good hunting.
Thanks for that, Ian. And now John Field tells us what we can see in the Southern Hemisphere night sky during May.
Kia ora and welcome to the May Dodcast from Carter Observatory in Wellington, New Zealand. May sees Orion the Hunter in the western sky below Sirius, the brightest star. Sirius marks the head of one of the two dogs following the Hunter across the sky. Procyon marks the lesser dog. To the right of Orion are two bright stars marking Gemini, the twins. Sirius is the brightest star in our night sky, although starlike, the planets Venus, Jupiter, and sometimes Mars are brighter. Sirius is only the brightest star because it is nearby to our solar system, 8.7 light years away. It is about 23 times brighter than our Sun. Sirius is often called the dog star, as it is the brightest star in Canis Major, one of the two dogs that follow Orion across the sky. Sirius, being so bright, often twinkles, especially when low towards the horizon. This is due to shifting air currents breaking its light into separate colours. To Māori, Sirius is Takarua, the winter star. To Egyptians, it is Sophis, and its dawn rising heralded the annual floods down the Nile Valley. Below Sirius, Orion is now lying on his side, low in the west. A line of three bright stars forms his belt. To Māori, these three stars form part of the bird's snare, Te Mano Rōri. A fainter line of stars, and above and to the left of the belt, form his sword. To some southern hemisphere sky watchers, the belt and sword form an asterism called the pot or the saucepan. Opposite the setting Orion, Scorpius and Sagittarius can be seen rising in the east after sunset. By late evening, they are both well above the horizon and host a number of beautiful and interesting objects. In the south, Crux, the Southern Cross and the Pointers are now high overhead in our evening sky. Near to Beta Crucis is a cluster of stars called the Jewel Box. Visible as a hazy star, this cluster makes for a pretty sight in binoculars. More detail will be seen when viewed through a telescope. Between Crux and Sirius, running along the Milky Way, are the constellations of Carina, the Keel, and Vela the Sails. This region is home to a large number of bright stars, clusters, and nebulae, and some can be easily viewed with the unaided eye, and many more can be found using binoculars or a telescope. Eta Carina Nebula is the brightest of these, and covers a larger area of the sky than the Orion Nebula. This nebula, surprisingly, does not look as impressive as the Orion Nebula. This is due to it sitting in the Milky Way. Binoculars reveal a region embedded with star clusters and glowing clouds of gas intertwined with dark veins. Eta Carina itself appears as a bright orange-coloured star. In 1940, this star was visible only in telescopes 8th magnitude, but has been brightening since 1998 and is now a magnitude 4.6 star, visible with the unaided eye. This time of year offers a great opportunity to observe the Aurora Australis, or the Southern Lights. This is caused by the interaction of the solar wind with the Earth's magnetic field and atmosphere. Aurora can be visible from parts of southern New Zealand, Australia and South America. The amount of activity on the Sun in the form of sunspots, coronal holes and solar flares will affect the visibility and intensity of any aurora activity. The Sun has increased in activity so far this year and is predicted to peak during our spring of 2013, so hopefully this year we will see a number of bright auroras. A number of websites have real-time information and prediction of aurora and are well worth checking out to see if activity is occurring or forecasted. The planet Saturn will be visible throughout our evening sky. Appearing in the eastern twilight, this planet appears a bright yellow star sitting in front of the head of Scorpius. Although it is the second largest planet, with a diameter of 120,000 kilometers, the immense distance of 1 billion kilometers viewed in a telescope, the planet will appear as a small yellow disk surrounded by the famous ring system. Jupiter is in the evening sky, setting not long after the Sun, and by month's end will be joined by two other planets. Venus will be visible late in the month in the west after sunset and will climb higher as the month progresses. Mercury will also join the gathering, appearing as a bright orangey-yellow star. A conjunction will occur with the planets low in the evening sky, sitting about an hour after the Sun. Venus should be easy to find as closest to Jupiter on the 28th, just over a degree above Venus. Binoculars are likely to be needed to show Mercury at 3 degrees to their right. The Messenger spacecraft currently orbiting Mercury has confirmed early observations that water ice exists in some craters around the planet's north pole. These craters, like those on the Moon, are deep enough that sunlight never pours onto the crater floor, and this has allowed water deposits to survive. How the water was deposited there in the first place is open to debate. Another interesting result is that there is strong evidence that Mercury has a molten core, and this might be what drives its magnetic field. On May the 10th, around midday, observers in northern Australia will be treated to an annular eclipse. For observers either side of this line, a partial eclipse will be seen. Here in Wellington, less than 1% of the sun will be covered, and for North Cape, 13%. Comet 2012 S1 Ison has continued to brighten as it moves towards the sun, which is around 17th magnitude. The Hubble Space Telescope recently imaged the comet and captured a very active nucleus. Predictions have the comet brightening to visibility in binoculars during August, and becoming visible to the unaided eye in October. As comets generally take no notice of our predictions, we will have to wait and see how bright it actually gets. Many thanks for listening to our podcast, and we hope you have clear skies and great observing.